Okay, so can we start?
Yes, we can.
Okay, so for all the people that it's maybe watching us right now, maybe now or maybe later, my name is Santia Velázquez, just for the record. I'm from Puerto Rico, so please forgive my English if it's not perfect. I will try to do my best. And my interest today is about instructional design and the movement, no, about openness. So first of all, I would like to know, what was that first idea that came to your mind that, I don't know, made you change your mind about what was happening in the higher education? Why did you start thinking about openness and being so active in this type of movement right now?
Well, it's been a long time coming. I remember when I first posted my first open learning resource was in 1995, if you can believe it. And I had written something called Stephen's Guide to the Logical Fallacies, which still exists. You can see it at fallacies.ca. And I posted that online. And this is the early days of the web, and I didn't really think much of anything. But I did put a license on it because I wanted to, allow people to reuse it. And there was no Creative Commons or anything like that. And so I made something up. You can use it for whatever you want. Please let me know that you're using it, and don't take it and sell it. And that actually is the original license that still sits on some of the copies of that. And that guide to the logical fallacies, I've done all kinds of work since, but it's the most popular thing I've ever produced. Nothing I've done since then has come close to the popularity of that site. And that right away told me something about the power of distributing open educational resources. And it just seemed like the right thing to do for something that was as important as logical fallacies. It seemed like the right thing to do to release it openly so that everybody would have access to it.
That was very interesting. Did you get any kind of commentaries, comments
Yeah.
about the faculty or maybe friends or maybe people outside telling you why are you doing this or anything like that?
I got lots and lots of comments over the years from readers, mostly thanking me. A lot of people saying that they were using it. There were various translations into Portuguese and into Chinese, believe it or not. So a lot of feedback from users. Never anything from my colleagues. It was one of these things. I put it up on the web, and it could be like I had put it into a black hole. It just sort of didn't exist to them. And even to this day, it doesn't exist to them. Nobody knows that I wrote
I
this. So, yeah, it's a totally different communications line, right? Putting stuff online like that, you reach people, halfway around the world, but not the person in the next office.
That was very nice. You, for me, you are one of my inspiration because I have read a lot about what you've been writing, and for me, it is very important. That's why I selected for my seminar right here at the university the subject of openness. I think that higher education it's needing, lots of things, lots of resources, but most of all, professionals who are in charge of these important step. Okay, this is a major step that we have to take, and what you've been doing is amazing, and I have to congratulate you because we're doing things because of you and because of lots of people who are doing the right thing right now. For me, people like you, like George Simmons, like David Wiley, you are very important people in my life, and you are directing me through the right path, okay? And for example, as I told you before, my seminar is about openness. It's the title is Access to Knowledge, Challenges and Opportunities in in terms of openness in higher education in Puerto Rico. And one of my concerns is the following. Why are openness and the synergy required so important for Puerto Rico, being the Caribbean region, the less engaged in this kind of movement? I have read a lot about it, and I think, and not think, I am sure, that the Caribbean region is not doing what we have to do. So why is this important, openness and the synergy it requires? Why is it important?
Sorry, there's two aspects, but one about what the region is doing and the other about why openness is important. I think the two sort of work hand in hand. I can't speak directly to the Caribbean because I don't know a whole lot about the Caribbean region. I've never been there. I should. I know. Everybody in Canada says I should go to the Caribbean. Especially, we got 12 feet of snow this winter, if you can believe it. And my roof caved in. Oh, yeah. I wish I could be in the Caribbean. Not during hurricane season, though, so much.
No.
But, there's direct facts on the ground there that I'm not aware of and won't be able to speculate about. That said, I mean, the reason openness is important is that it creates the mechanism for the kind of dialogue that has to take place between people in a region in order to reach that base of common knowledge that is necessary to build a society, whether nationally or regionally. I mean, one of the difficulties, and I speculate, but one of the difficulties in the Caribbean may be that it's divided into numerous small countries and principalities and territories and such. And so a lot of the natural forces that would lead a region toward a lot of communication aren't there. Now, of course, there are institutions like the University of the West Indies and other regional forces that do bring people together. So my observation is immediately not 100% accurate. But when a region, and indeed when a planet, is divided up politically and geographically, it really makes it important that we have some sort of common basis. I don't want to say common. I want to be careful using the word common, but some sort of basis for communication, some sort of way of exchanging ideas and moving the dialogue forward. And to me, open resources generally are the means toward that. It used to be the way we communicated with each other was simply through words. But more and more in society today, we communicate with each other using much more complex ideograms. Things like pictures, things like videos, things like multimedia, things like articles, things like this conversation. And it becomes a vocabulary, a new language in which we speak. And for a language to exist, to even be possible, the words and the letters of that language have to be available to everyone, not just to listen, but to remix and reuse and communicate on their own.
Yeah, and it's very important. For example, today we had this activity, and the major concern of professors was that it's my content, it's my property, and I'm like, okay, but you have a previous knowledge. Where did you get it? So if you have previous knowledge, it's because someone shared it with you. So what is the problem of sharing and of creating and connecting with different people so these contents and these resources can be, a great product for our academy, for our students, for the entire society, for the entire world. So I hope that I touch them just a little bit, and then they can, search for themselves, and that's what I want. That's what I want. I do not want to, to give them all, but to give them this first step, the step of doubt, so they can share for more information and learn for themselves what, this movement is doing for every one of us.
Yeah, I once wrote a paper called Copyright Ethics and Theft, which you may have seen. And it raises one of the points that you just made, and I think it's a really important point. And it's the idea originally attributed to Isaac Newton that we stand on the shoulders of giants. And every bit of expression, every communication, every paper we write, every photograph we take depends on a huge body of prior knowledge. And if people are to lay claim only to what they created, really it's a very small percentage on top of what they've assumed from all of these other sources. And I tell people, I'd be happy to grant you ownership of that part of this thing that is uniquely yours. Would you please identify it? It's not the words. All of the words came from someone else. Every single word.
Exactly.
You know, it's not the ideas in many senses. It's certainly not the stuff you quoted from other people. So what part is it? And I won't use that.
Exactly. It's like that.
Yeah.
Okay, another question is, because what I'm studying is instructional design and educational technology. And one of my concerns is the following: as instructional designer, what core skills, you know, we as instructional designers must have in order to engage academics, to embrace this participatory culture and to contribute, you know, in this world? What kind of example, what core skills should I have in order to embrace them, to give them this energy that they need?
It's not clear to me that the focus of your activities ought to be trying to convince other people to do things. And your question asks me how to do that. And honestly, there's no surefire method. I mean, even a gun isn't going to work all the time, right? We've seen evidence recently where you can point a gun at the people, but you can't make them march. And so I'm less concerned about the skills needed in order to convince a population to do such and such, and I'm more concerned about the skills that an individual would need in order to accomplish the things that they want to do in their lives. Because I think that the best way, sorry, I'm just going to move that out here. I think that the best way to convince a population of anything is to set an example. I mean, it's what Gandhi said, be the change that you want to see in the world. It's certainly the method that I've attempted to propagate the idea of open source and sharing and all the rest of it. You know, I could go on some sort of media campaign, but I find it more effective to just simply be open. I just spent the last 4 hours in my office here doing my work on live internet radio because it's a way of sharing what I'm doing. It's fun, but it's also informative, and it gives people a message. So what are the core skills that you need in order to live your life, and perhaps with a bit of an emphasis on critical literacies and critical skills? And those core skills are things like, well, literacy right off the bat, being able to understand what is written, what is communicated, being able to communicate yourself, scientific abilities, being able to predict the future, being able to perform calculations, life skills, you know, being confident in yourself, in your own path, finding value to contribute to the world. Those are the major things I would say. And if we wanted to focus into communication specifically, I divide literacies into 6 major categories. Syntax, which is recognition of patterns, recognition of rules and principles, application of these rules and principles and patterns. Semantics, which is about value, truth, and meaning, and understanding what a communication is intended to say and how to say it. Pragmatics, or the use of a communication, how to do things with words, to quote J.L. Austin. context, knowing about the placement of a communication in an environment, understanding localization, understanding culture and tradition. I'm trying to remember the other two. Change and dynamism is particularly important. And there's one I'm so awful at this.
Okay. It's okay. If you want, we can continue. Because I know that you have said so much. That's extremely important for me. And I just understood whatever, all the things that you have said. And I am so grateful, and I know that we have to do all that, but sometimes we feel so frustrated with the faculty because they do not want to change. And sometimes we think, okay, I am an instructional designer, I have to work with them all day long, or maybe, we have to do something like maybe being with them, give them the follow-up they need. And sometimes I feel that this is not enough, that I'm doing something that is not enough for them to do what I want, what the universe wants, what society needs. And then we feel a bit frustrated, that as instructional designers, we're not doing what we have to do. That's why I was asking you, what do we need? What do you think that we need in order to achieve what we want, or what the society needs.
Yeah, the last of the six, by the way, is cognition, reasoning skills, deduction, induction, etc. No, I remember. Oh, this may be a year and a half, 2 years ago. Someone said to me, and I just carried it with me for a while. Said to me, the secret to successful public speaking is to love your audience. And you think, well, that's pretty ridiculous, right? But if you think about it, where things go wrong when you're public speaking is that you start feeling self-conscious about your efforts. You look at the audience, you think that the audience is not reacting the way they should, that maybe they're judging you, evaluating you, that they're not believing what you say. You know what I mean? But if you turn that around and take the attitude that the audience is my friend, if you think about it, they've all stopped doing whatever they're doing to come here to listen to me, all right? Right off the bat, that's a huge vote of confidence. And believe me, it's a vote of confidence. I once gave a presentation in Madison, Wisconsin in 2002 that had zero people in the audience. Zero. Wow. So trust me, when you go into a room and there's an audience there, right away you've won, right? And then if you have that attitude, now the attitude is love the audience. And what you want to do is try to make them at ease. Make them, maybe not happy, but give them useful stuff. Help them do what they want to do. In other words, you're giving. If you look at the practical situation where you are working with a professor, the concept of love your audience translates into, how do I help that person do what it is they want to do? Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is that they want to do. First thing, you have to figure out what they want to do, right? because everybody has something different in their lives. One of the big things with social movements is they think everybody is motivated by the same kind of thing. But one of the big things I've discovered is nobody's motivated by the same kind of thing. Nobody. You have your own motivations for doing your work. They're completely different from the person in the next office. I guarantee it. Some people follow a cause. Some people want to raise a puppy. Some people just want to go fishing. Who knows, right? And people, even if they have the same objective, they have different views of how to get there. And so every case is unique. But learning what it is that that person wants to do and then helping that person accomplish it that in itself is how to convince them of things. This is not advice that's unique to me. It's Dale Carnegie, How to Win Friends and Influence People, says much the same kind of thing, in many more words, of course, but much the same kind of thing. Find out what they want to accomplish and then help them do it.
Yeah.
And openness plays a role because it helps you help them. And that's where it becomes key.
And that's great. And that's the biggest, greatest advice I have received in my life. And thank you very, very much. Well, after that, one other concern that we have here is in terms of administration. Okay, administrators sometimes, they try to put the biggest barrier, in front of us. So if I give you the chance to tell them something, okay, you gave me an advice right now as a person, as an instructional designer, mm-hmm. and if it is for the administration, what kind of advice, recommendation can you give them? Because this is very sad, okay, that they have an important place in the university, for example.
Sure.
And they are not doing what they should be doing, and sometimes they think that if we innovate, if we try to bring something new, we are going to make the system unstable, and that is not true, okay? And for that reason, we are lacking of great resources, great professionals, great students, and every time the university is going back, for me, it should be completely different, okay? We are in a system, for example, in Puerto Rico. The University of Puerto Rico is one of the most important universities in the Caribbean, for example. Mm-hmm. And that is the university for which I work, because I am studying at the University of the Sacred Heart. It's a private university. But, for example, the University of Puerto Rico is a very, but extremely traditional system, okay? The structure, the organizational structure is terrible, and I think that it should be deconstructed somehow. I don't know how. We should find a way. But what can you tell them to the administrators? I don't know. Something just like you did mm-hmm. a couple of minutes ago with me. But what can you tell them?
There's a bunch of things that ran through my head because you talked about changing administrators, but you also talked about changing institutions. And I think it was John Lennon who said that the way to have a revolution is not to change the institutions, but to change the people. And I think this applies in this case as well to a large degree, because really, if you simply attack the institution head on, the institution will fight back. And if you simply try to change what administrators are doing head on, administrators will fight back. They're in a position I don't envy, frankly. They have lots of power and influence and all of that, but they live their lives afraid of risk.
Yeah.
Was it freedom is another name for having nothing left to lose? These people have not very much freedom because they have a lot to lose, or they may perceive they have a lot to lose. Personally, I don't think they have a whole lot to lose, but you lose your power, you lose your authority, you lose your nice office. It makes you not inclined to take chances the way you would. Certainly not the way they did when they were young, and the way you do when you're young. And you're young now, you take chances. So right now, I'm speaking to the you of 40 years from now. Remember this interview and take chances. but back to the people who won't take chances. So you have to show them success, right? They won't take your word for it. Why would they? They're a university president. You're not.
So what do you recommend, first of all, it's a question.
Yeah.
Inside the other one.
Yeah.
What do you recommend is that, for example, I start doing something by myself, show them that I was successful, and why is that important? You know, it's like presenting them so evident, so empiric details.
Exactly. That's exactly right. We go back to Stephen's Guide to the Logical Fallacies. You know why I did it? I wrote the thing when I was working at Grand Prairie Regional College. And now I'm working at Assiniboine. This is, you know, 2 years later. And I have this nice document, and I code it into HTML, and I put it up on the web. And I did it as a way of showing that you could take learning material and put it on the web.
Mm-hmm.
People didn't know that then. You'd think people, but, you know, they didn't know. How could you? I mean, this is hard. And what I showed them is, no, it's easy. I did it with a word processor. I wanted to set up, this is, again, still at Assiniboine, I wanted the university to have a web server because I was brought to the college in order to promote their online learning initiatives. And you needed a web server for that. But I couldn't convince people. I went to computer services. I said, we need a web server. They said, it's not possible to have a web server in our current network configuration. So I went out. I did some digging around. I found a Windows-based web server. I set it up on my computer at home. It worked. I went to the office, tried to access it. It worked. So there I am, running a web server off my home computer and accessing it from my office at work, so it looked good. And then what I did is I took the same software and installed it on my desktop computer in my office and started it up. Then I went down to computer services. I said, I want the college to have its own web server. And they said, no, it's not possible to have a web server in our current network configuration. And I said, go to, and I give them the number of the IP address, go to, that's a web server running on our network. It's accessible anywhere in the world. It's running on my desktop. So it is possible. And you see, you have to demonstrate. I did a lot of demonstrating at Assiniboine. I've done a lot since then. But, you know, we did an online course, Introduction to Instruction. It was a teacher's course to prove that we could. That you could have a course online. We did a program. We did a learning management system. And it's this kind of thing that you need to do. So these projects often develop outside the formal structure of the institution. That's necessarily going to be the case. The institution and the people who run the institution can't afford to take the risk of trying something that they don't know will work.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, even if there's not a large financial risk, mm-hmm. you know, there's questions of reputation.
Yes.
You know, we might look bad. There's this fear of failure. But if you try something outside the formal structures and show that it works, it is much more likely to be adopted within the formal structure. And that's how these institutions change. The institutions change and grow and adapt by looking outside themselves and bringing in things that they know work. So what you need to do is figure out how to feed these things to the institution from outside.
Mm-hmm. And one other concern is, for example, most of these administrators are, okay, maybe they were professors. Okay, professor, maybe a professor of science, or maybe professor of engineering, or whatever. But they didn't have a preparation, you know, in psychology or education, and they're not aware of those changes.
Right.
Okay, because sometimes some people say, no, I do not agree with learning theories or with this kind of educational mm-hmm. needs. They are important, and for example, right now, if I say something about connectivism, it could be, I don't know, a couple of people know about it, but the administrators, they do not, and I am sure, I'm pretty sure that they do not know anything about it.
Right.
So, and that's my other question. How is connectivism, and maybe I know, but they don't, and that's an important thing, how can we connect these two terms, okay, collectivism and openness, because they are they should be together. So what can you say about it?
Well, it's not about connecting the terms. It's not about, you know, the name of the theory or even the definition of the theory. It's about how these things are applied. And it doesn't matter whether they know about connectivism. They know stuff that relates to connectivism. I used to teach logic in First Nations reserves in Northern Canada. And you'd think that logic is the last thing that they either know about or would want to learn. Because it's kind of rough country up there, and it's, you know, logic's not really very practical. But I'd go into these classes, and I'd tell them, you already know what I'm trying to teach you. And they'd all have a good laugh over that. And then I'd say, well, you know, 'cause there's, and the way these roads are set up in these northern communities, right, there's the road, and there's a railway runs right beside the road, and that's it, right? So I'd say, well, If you stepped on the train track when the train was coming, you'd die, right? And they all, yeah, well, yeah. So Fred stepped on the railway track. So what's going to happen? And the whole class goes, oh, he's going to die. And I said, well, did you need me to tell you that? And of course they said, well, no, we know. Well, that's logic. Right, we've just done if A then B, A therefore B, and that's logic. You already know this. And so these people who are in these other disciplines already know the fundamentals of openness, already know the fundamentals of connectivism. I mean, open educational resources, connectivism. These are just names of theories, of academic ideas trying to get at these processes. But the processes themselves are not mysterious to people, right? Every single administrator everywhere knows the value of connecting. That's how they got to be where they are, right? So, you know, they already know this. They don't know the theory, but you know they already know this. Every academic everywhere knows the value of openness. That's how they get published. That's how they build their academic careers. So you're able to tap in to those elements of the theory they already know and build on those. And the trick, I think, is to be able to find the way they understand these things already and relate what you're doing to their existing understanding. Now, this is assuming you're trying to convince them and communicate with them and all that, right? So you have to reach into what their thinking is and what their understanding is. And then one last thing, too. And this is often the hardest thing. It's certainly the hardest thing for me. You have to assume their goodwill. Assume that they intend the best of outcomes, that they want the institution to succeed, that they want the professors to succeed and the students to succeed, and that they want you to succeed. That in their own strange, murky, hard to understand way, they're on your side. You know, or at the very least, indifferent. Sometimes the worst case is when they're just indifferent. But they're not trying to stop you. They're trying to do the best in the way that they understand best to be. And it will involve openness, and it will involve connection, and the way to reach them is through those things that they are already doing that involve openness and connection. I think that's the best I can answer that.
It's great. It's great. Wow. I'm just amazed here, and I know that I will see this interview a couple of times because, you know, you gave me lots of details that I will need, that my classmates will need, that the entire world will need, because, you know, it's something that, well, you blew my mind. Okay, let's start with that. I need this, okay? I need this for my seminar, for my thesis process that will begin in April. So I will do lots of things for this, for higher education in Puerto Rico, okay? That's my biggest concern right now, because, for example, the University of Puerto Rico is having lots of problems right now. I don't know if you know about them, but we are going through a very difficult process. And I think that this movement, which is openness, will bring us a new light, will bring us a new path for access to knowledge, which is extremely necessary for our students. And I am very, very extremely grateful of this, I don't know, these minutes that you gave me. I know that you're a very busy person, as I told you in my emails. And thank you very much, very much for this interview, okay? So I'm very grateful. One more time.
No, it's my pleasure, and you know, it's what I do, so I'm certainly happy to have been of help.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I will present it to my classmates, so I will have a virtual activity with it, maybe using VoiceThread or something like that, where they can see the interview and then post some comments, or I don't know, I have to design it and give it to my professor. But surely they will enjoy it a lot. They will have lots of ideas, lots of knowledge, you know, because what you have said is a reality, and we have to deal with it. Okay, so have a great day.
Thanks.
Have a great week, and thanks one more time.
Thanks, you too. Oh, and before you go, I just want to tell you something.
Oh, that's beautiful.
That's outside my window right now. Wow. That's feet of snow on the ground and the trees.
God. I'm so sorry that I don't have a window so I can show you the sun right here.
Anyway, I just thought you might like to see that.
Do you know something? I have never, ever seen snow in my life, okay? Oh. Yes, I have, but, you know,
sure.
Or pictures or something like that, but I've never been, you know, in a place like that in prison so I can play with it and make snowballs or snowmen. Yeah. But it's extremely beautiful.
It looks very nice, but believe me, it's overrated.
I know. Thank you for showing me your window and what it's outside.
Oh, you're welcome. So, have a great day.
Have a great day, and thank you very much. Okay? Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.